The highway was more than cement and dirt. It was interesting to that art world because of the waitresses, the service station attendants, the record drivers, and that type of thing. That's what Route 66 was about. It was about the people.
It's about the people. It still is. It's the human experience. But I've never romanticized Route 66. It can be, and you know, I'm a romantic. Perhaps I have somewhat, but I'm also very realistic about Route 66 because I see a crooked road, a historic road, the Lincoln Highway, Route 66, the old Dixie Highway, as great barometers. I see them, as I say in my book, as a mirror held up to the nation. You can get a feel. You can take the pulse of the road and get sort of the pulse of the nation. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad, sometimes it is ugly. That was not a romantic journey at all for the thousands of displaced tenant farmers, the Okies, the Arkies, the refugees from the southern plains that poured into the highway during the 1-2 punch of the Depression and Dust Bowl to seek new lives in the so-called promised land of California. They were broken people, and they were met in many cases on the borders of Arizona and California with spittle, with derision, with billy clubs, with hatred, and yet those good souls, for the most part, survived and rebuilt their lives all along the road. And when you have experiences like that, or experiences of the war years when civilian traffic virtually disappeared, everything switched over to armaments, and there was tire and gas rationing, you had convoys of troops on the road, not only on the concrete road, but on the steel road, on the railroads, the great ally of 66 all the way out west. And so all along the road, you had training bases from the Great Lakes to the Pacific. You had Patton training his desert warriors in the Mojave Sands right off of 66. And then when the defeated Africa Corps and Italian troops from North Africa, where did they go? They came back to prisoner of war camps on Route 66, such as the one at El Reno, Oklahoma, at Fort Reno, where today I can still walk amongst the graves of young German and Italian soldiers who died in prison camp of wounds or disease who lie buried there. And oftentimes I encounter some of their comrades who've come back to pay their tribute. Or up at Miami, Oklahoma, where there are the graves of young British air cadets who, even before we got into the war, were training for the Battle of Britain and died in accidents, and they're buried under Union Jacks along Route 66. So those tremendous upheavals, those tremendous times, those episodes in our history had an impact on the road and vice versa. Then after the war, all the GIs come home. You had prosperity here, and you had people wanting to travel again, wanting to show their family where they had trained, where they had been. The baby boom, the housing boom, the car boom, which led to this insane romance with the internal combustion engine, and everybody had to have two huge gas-guzzling Detroit sleds with fins. You know, that was the heyday, and that was the time of Elvis and Poodle Skirts and James Dean. But Route 66 is much more than that episode. It's those other episodes, and it's what came later through the 60s and the 70s and the desertification and the limbo years until we woke people up and said, it's still there, and now people are returning. And now they're shunning turnpikes. They're shunning the interstate. They're getting involved with heritage tourism. Let's travel the old road. Let's travel the crooked road. Let's use the interstates to our advantage, but let's get off. As I always say many times, life begins at the off-ramp. Get off the road. But know that it's not going to be predictable. When you're on the turnpike between Tulsa and Oklahoma City, it's predictable. It's boring. You know you're going to get the Golden Arches, and you know you're going to eat your lunch out of a styrofoam box, and you're going to pump your gas at that pump at yourself station, and you're going to go in and see the same junk food. The restroom smells the same. Everything's the same. The people look the same. Everything's the same. It's generic. It's cookie cutter. It's homogenized. You get on that old road, it ain't predictable. You go into a cafe, and you've not been there before. I say this, you don't know what you're going to get. You might get ptomaine poisoning. You might just fall to your knees sick, or you might find a blue plate special that you would kill your mother for.
as we were talking about the Dust Bowl days, we need to acknowledge the fact, because of the Dust Bowl, Woody Guthrie wrote a very famous song.
Yeah.
So Long, It's Good to Know You.
Well, that was just one. I mean, that is a great song. Guthrie truly is a national treasure. Incidentally, today, on this very date, 83 years ago, is when the Star-Spangled Banner became the official national anthem of the United States, 1930-something. It's horribly difficult to sing that song, and everybody butchers it, and it's hideous the way some people sing it. But a better anthem would have been, "This land is your land, this land is my land." Much easier to sing. I would offer that. I truly appreciate and value the importance of Woody Guthrie.
Well, elsewhere in this website, I have interviewed his daughter, and you can hear that. And he wrote "This Land Is Your Land" because he didn't care for the song "God Bless America."
Right.
And he didn't think it was down to where the folk were, the people were.
The people, and that's what it's all about. He also wrote, besides the Dust Bowl ballads and the Depression songs and the traveling music, he wrote the great Ballad of Pretty Boy Floyd, which I value very much since I wrote about Floyd. There's a great line in there. "Some men will rob you with a six-gun and some with a fountain pen." How true, how true.